This is Digital Dave.
And I'm Fast Eddie. And with us here today from Whisk, Brian Yutko. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. You guys make brooms, right?
Yeah, we make brooms. They are full of software, and they clean your floor very well.
Great. Fantastic. Okay, autonomous air taxi.
Autonomous air taxis.
Now, you are actually flying, I heard someone say earlier.
Yeah, so yesterday we actually opened the air show with a flight of our Gen 5 aircraft, and it fully autonomously flew, took off like a helicopter, flies like an airplane. It's battery electric, and we flew for just shy of 5 minutes yesterday in opening up the air show.
Okay. How many passengers?
That's a 2-passenger aircraft, but we had no one on board the aircraft yesterday.
Right, right. I understand that. I mean, they wouldn't let you, but am I going to call for an Uber or a Whisk? Is that how the model works?
Ideally, in the future, you will be able to take a Whisk in order to save time to get to ultimately where you'd like to go.
That sounds interesting.
It's very interesting. It's a passenger air taxi, all electric, EVTOL. Now, the E part is the interesting thing because the battery technology is still evolving. What kind of batteries are you guys using?
Yeah, so we use lithium-ion batteries that are almost exactly the type that you have in your cell phones in your pocket today.
You can't have mine.
We just use many thousands of them, so we're collecting them, and I have a basket, and if you could just give us your cell phone at the end, that would be really great.
Yeah.
So we use many thousands of lithium-ion cells that we package together to be in a really safe pack that can be used for aerospace purposes, because obviously our purposes in aviation are much different from how your cell phone is used, and so we have to do some special methods and technologies to make that very safe.
That's what I want to hear.
The big danger with a lithium-ion battery, of course, is abusing the battery and fire.
Yep.
How do you keep these batteries from blowing up?
They don't abuse them.
Yeah, well, we actually, you know what's funny is we actually think about it the other way. Is we say, what would happen if the batteries were actually to ignite? And so we do tests where we actually have to fully ignite the packs in order to show that we wouldn't have damage to the overall airplane. So the packs are actually built in a really redundant way. We have modules and submodules and so on, such that if any of those ignite, we could still continue to safely operate the airplane and it won't, you know, ultimately damage the air structure.
Smoke on.
Smoke on, definitely.
Smoke on, but in a very exciting way.
Yeah, but I'm sure your systems, as soon as they detect that, they are told, go find some place to land.
Yeah, exactly. So part of what we do is we really automate a lot of the, what we call contingency functions. So a lot of the system, it monitors its health to understand what's the status of the aircraft. And if it does need to execute a contingency, it decides that based on the status of what it understands.
Okay. Now, this, you said with human oversight, does that mean a pilot on board or someone on the ground monitoring?
Yeah, that means a supervisor on the ground that monitors the flight of the aircraft. And the way to think about this is that person, they don't actually have a stick and rudder on the ground where they're actually flying the aircraft. Because the configuration, you know, we have 12 rotors on the aircraft, it's very complex to perform the flight controls, so those are all automated. What that person does is effectively in a normal operation, they push a button. They push a single button that launches the aircraft. And the aircraft executes its mission and it would execute the contingencies that I talked about if it needed to. If that person needs to step in for one reason or another, they could step in and tell it to execute a contingency. But they don't actually fly the aircraft itself.
Okay, what about traffic avoidance? Something pops up that you hadn't planned on.
Yeah, so on the Gen 5 aircraft, we don't have what's called a sense and avoid air system on that aircraft. That's a technology maturation platform for us. On the Gen 6 aircraft that we're certifying right now with the FAA, that aircraft will have a sense and avoid system and will do automated sensing of the air traffic in case there's what's called non-cooperative traffic that might be in the airspace.
That never happens.
Yeah, I've never seen that before.
Yeah.
I'm a pilot too, and so I have a deep appreciation for what it means to be flying around at 500 feet.
Yeah, I like the fact that you're a pilot. Thank you. The whole concept of being in an airplane where the pilot's butt isn't on the line is kind of
I have to say it's you know, as a pilot who's, you know, involved in developing these kinds of autonomous systems, I think it's pretty easy to think about the world where, you know, some people have a view, you know, it'll always, you know, we're going to head towards an autonomous future, or we'll never have any autonomous airplanes. I think we're going to have mixed use kind of airspace for as far as the eye can see. You know, we'll have some introduction of autonomous aircraft, but we'll always have piloted systems that are flying around the airspace, and we should.
That sounds good to me.
How are you going to get the public used to flying in an aircraft that doesn't have a pilot on board? I have to admit, this gives me the willies a little.
The first
bit.
Flights are going to have the autopilot from Airplane.
Yeah, the inflatable
to make them feel
pilot.
Better.
Yeah, actually, it'll be me and the pilot from Airplane,
yes,
we're going to be doing the test flight together.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So
filling in with helium now.
Yeah. It's a great question. You know, some of this is education and engaging with the public, and a lot of that is, you know, we're doing that here in Spades. So the purpose here is not just for us to demonstrate; it's really to engage and honestly engage with the pilot community, because that's really what's here at Oshkosh. So we've really enjoyed doing that. But really practically, my view is the only way to address the question that you just raised is to make a really safe airplane that the FAA certifies and that ultimately has a value proposition. So if it has a value proposition where people are interested in taking it because it could save them a lot of time, and it has a very high level of safety, then I think we'll climb a pretty typical adoption curve for new technology.
All right. It's just getting that curve started. That's going to be the trick.
Yeah. I'm going to be the devil's advocate here.
I love it.
Okay.
Let's do it.
You have the worst case scenario.
Yeah.
Everything just up and decides to crap out on you. Do you have a ballistic parachute on board as last ditch?
The Gen 5 aircraft has a ballistic parachute on board. So the aircraft that you saw flying yesterday in the flight and the air show, that actually has a ballistic parachute on board, which we've tested. And in fact, that aircraft can fly with motors out too. So, you know, obviously not every motor out in hover, but a few motors out in hover it can actually still fly. The Gen 6 airplane will not have a ballistic parachute. There's such a high level of redundancy that's built into the aircraft for the purposes of the FAA certification program that ultimately we found that we couldn't get the type of credit that we would really need from a ballistic parachute. And there's technical reasons we can get into it if it's helpful.
This aircraft is fully computerized and all of that, right? Please tell me it does not run on Windows 10.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it doesn't run on Windows 10. We actually still run on Windows 95. It's a very stable operating system.
Stable. Yeah. No, it's on XP. Will you have the ability to voice communicate between the flight supervisor / director and the passengers?
Yes.
Like if a passenger's having an issue for whatever reason.
Yeah, not only that, but we will actually also be able to voice communicate between the supervisor and air traffic control as well. So one of the things in developing an autonomous system that's really key to understand is people don't go away, they change what they're doing. And one of the things that we know is we have to talk to air traffic control. So the supervisor will talk and can take a vector as an example, as one simple example. But passengers may also want to speak with someone on the ground. And so we have a hospitality manager that a passenger on board can push a button and say, I have a question. Now, they're not talking to the supervisor. They're talking to someone whose role is to answer their questions about, I feel unsure, I feel whatever it might be.
Or there's a medical emergency.
Exactly. One of the benefits that we have in being electric, you mentioned, you know, batteries are heavy and complicated, is we don't actually fly that far or that long. And so that actually makes some of the autonomy problem a little bit easier and some of the sort of passenger management problem a little bit easier. So we think it's kind of the right place to take the first step for autonomous airplanes.
Well, that brings up the question, what is your target mission length?
Yeah, so the target mission lengths are generally somewhere around 20 to 30 miles. They're places where you can save a substantial amount of time by being able to fly these relatively short distances.
Like from, say, inner city to local airport to catch a commercial flight.
That's exactly right. Or even airport to airport in some places where the geography might be amenable to that. The simple way that I think about this is it's a lot like setting up a gondola without a wire. So these aircraft are not intended to fly all over the place, you know, deciding where they want to go. This is like establishing a gondola between, you know, an origin and a destination, except we don't have a wire. We have an airplane.
Okay.
What about medevac purposes? Have you thought about the possibility of using this aircraft modified for medevac purposes?
Yes. And in fact, I think the you know, early uses of autonomous aircraft, if you think about, you know, the especially in the DoD types of use cases, which we're not actively working on right now, you could imagine in the future, you know, autonomous aircraft being able to go in and do CASAVAC and these other kinds of missions that might be able to provide a ton of value in dangerous areas.
Okay.
Sounds interesting.
Well, I mean, would that be something, again, established route only, or would you, emergency services would call for you to land here and give you some coordinates?
In those scenarios, that's exactly why our first use cases are really those kind of established routes. But those emergency use cases, you would need to have those kinds of on-demand, you know, go to a particular location.
Okay. In a situation like that, are you going to put onboard obstacle detection?
Yep.
Right, because obviously you may not have any idea what kind of an LZ you're flying into.
Yep, and we have that in the nominal use case as well. So the question is just the operational approval to do that type of mission.
Okay.
What about a video link? If you're running into, a hot LZ, are you going to have a video link so that the person who's overseeing all of this can do a go, no-go decision if they decide it's too hot?
Yeah, so in the commercial use case, ideally our LZs will not be hot because we will be managing those LZs very carefully. So this would be controlled infrastructure. But in the use cases you're talking about there, future use cases, where we're doing, you know, medical evacuations, et cetera, then that would be a part of the operations.
Okay, real quick, Brian, where can we find you on the field?
So we are near the Boeing center, like right on the center of the airfield. We actually have Gen 6 there on site. You can come and see it, sit inside of it, see what it's like in an autonomous airplane. And we also intend, you know, we'll see how the weather holds up, but we intend to fly again today to open the air show at night, right around sunset at 8:15 or so.
Okay, very good. We've been talking with Brian Yutko from WISC, which is an interesting concept. I'm Digital Dave.
And I'm Fast Eddie, and this is EAA Radio.